Gracias por todo.
That's it for Stage and Studio. My thanks to cable engineer Tave Fache Drake. If you missed any of the show, visit stageandstudio.org or kabu.fm/stageandstudio, and you can download shows on iTunes. And don't forget to like us on facebook.com/stage_studio and tweet me at @stage_studio. Till next time, I'm Dimae Roberts.
Hello, KBOO listeners. The time is 11:29, and you are listening to KBOO Portland. That was Stage and Studio. That program has been made possible by KBOO members and a grant from PD Expendables. PD Expendables Stage and Studio Supplies. PD Expendables sells and rents to film and theater production, from gel and globes to airy LED lighting. They can be reached at 503-887-5880 or pdexpendables.com. Let me say that again, from gel and globes to paint and lights. pdexpendables.com, 503-887-5880. We're listening to a little bit of John Coltrane from Live at Birdland, and that is called My Lady. Up next is Art Focus. Stick around. And then at noon today, we have some Spanish programming and some wonderful music. So we hope you stay with us through into the afternoon.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certifications requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Events Committee meets the third Thursday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Hi, my name is Eric Bartels, and this is Art Focus on KBOO Portland. We are honored and delighted to have as our guest this week a true eminence of the local art scene, the artist and educator RV Smith. RV, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Those who know your work are familiar with your use of a very vivid color palette and your very bold and vibrant depictions of American culture, in particular African American culture, sometimes using familiar icons from entertainment and media. Your work has been seen around the country and no doubt around the world. You are from the South originally, and
yes.
Made your way to the West Coast as a young
man. Probably around the age of 13, I left Jasper, Texas, and moved to Los Angeles, where my mother lived. And we were my mother, my brother, sister, and myself. We took a train from Texas, from Jasper, Texas, to Los Angeles.
No doubt your art is informed by that upbringing, the years in the South, in the years before World War II. I don't know how specific you want me to get about which years they were, but that was a different time.
Oh, yeah.
And certainly those experiences, both in the South and perhaps in Southern California, influenced your art and continue to influence your art.
Yeah. Yes? Those were years that I'm you know, I lived through them. They're part of my history, and they're part of me. They're part of, you know, leaving that out would be a travesty. I grew up in the Jim Crow South, and for those who don't know anything about Jim Crow, this started way back after slavery in the early or late 1800s, when it was made practically illegal to be a person of African descent. Lynchings were often. Inequality was ruled the day. Inequality for black and brown people.
When did you become interested in art? Was it as a child, or did it come later?
Well, earlier. My great-grandmother, who I grew up with in Texas, was born a slave, and she took a real interest in me. I could draw, or I was learning to draw, and we lived on a farm, and I did a copper tooling of my horse, and I gave it to my great-grandmother, and she was really elated, and that was encouragement. I saw that I could get recognition from just doing art.
So it really became, it continued on from there. It was, you never sort of left it aside, you never put it aside. Is it fair to say it was always a part of who you were, even growing up?
Always. It's who I am. It's who I always wanted to be. I went to a fortune teller once when I was a kid, and she said, "What do you want to be?" And I said, "Well, who knows what you want to be? So I think I want to be a doctor." She says, "Well, you know, you can be anything you want to be." And that's what really stuck with me. Not the whole doctor thing. You can be anything you want to be. I didn't understand the realities of the South at that time, but I still believe, I believe that if by committing yourself, you can make strides toward what you expect from life.
In addition to your achievements as an artist, you have been an educator for many years. You are a professor at Pacific Northwest College of Art.
Professor Emeritus.
Okay.
I retired a couple of years ago. They still ask me in for, you know, to do, you know, maybe teach a class. Every time you think you're out, they pull you back in. That sort of thing.
You spent many years at teaching at the college level, but have also worked extensively with younger kids.
Yes.
You spent a number of years at SEI, Self Enhancement Inc., the alternative alternative school in North Portland, and elsewhere. So,
yes.
So you've worked with populations of younger students.
I've spent a number of years working with SEI. When I started, I was a lot more involved, and then later on, I was a contributor, a donator. That was my way of giving back, and I think through that program, I've sent a lot of kids to school. In working with SEI, I've worked with the Caldera, which is a summer camp for at-risk kids in Sisters, Oregon, run by Dan Wyden. I've worked with recently Rosemary Anderson School, and this has been a fascinating engagement. I actually wasn't aware of this school until I became aware when I'm working on this project for there's a new building going up on MLK and Alberta. And I'm doing the mural for that, and it has to do with the community. Well, I want to know about the community. So I went to Rosemary Anderson School to talk to the kids there. And I got tremendous insight into what young people really see in their community. What is that community to them? And a lot of that I include in the mural.
And what is the status? You're referring to a complex that's under construction currently, as you said, on Martin Luther King Boulevard.
Right.
Is the mural complete?
I've done the painting part, and now it's going to the manufacturer,
okay.
And it's going to be on porcelain tile, and it's going to adhere to the building. It's going to be 18 feet by 24 feet. But the important thing to me is really, really what I learned in this process. And it's a continuing experience, and it's one that any artist that's worth the salt is going to do his homework. And my homework started with community leaders, and then with the Rosemary Anderson School. And with that, we took those, I didn't take them, the schools and the children or the students and their teachers, and we went to the art museum. This is totally new to me, even though I taught at Pacific Northwest College of Art for 30 years. As a group, I would take my students to the art museum, but these were mostly all white kids. With Rosemary Anderson coupling with the art museum, it was an incredible experience. And I just like to give a shout out to Portland Art Museum. I have never experienced an art museum in that way.
Full disclosure here, I am a journalist and educator by training, and for the last 2 years, I have been a teacher at the North Campus of Rosemary Anderson High School, a private alternative school for at-risk youth, mm-hmm. That has four campuses in the Portland area. Let's go back to what you discovered in your visit to the fortune teller, the idea that you truly could do anything you wanted to do, that be who you wanted to be. In working with young students, and especially students from underserved populations, mm-hmm. What have you experienced in terms of how art can change their thinking about what they're capable of, where they might go?
Well, I think art is a bridge. It's a bridge to understanding. Understanding about life, life skills. Industry is looking for creative people. People who can think, people who can make decisions, people who problem solving, and we talked some about that earlier. And this is what industry is working for, and this is what you learn in art school. This developing that creativity, we all have it, but we have to develop it. I imagine that at some point, if I really applied myself, I could be good at math. But that in art, you have to be good at all of that. You learn all of that. You learn physics. It's not an easy. When I started art, I said, "Oh well, yeah, this. I think this is pretty easy. I just do this." But when you take that further, it's a whole different ball game. It's a whole different understanding about how we relate to the world and how the world relates to us. And I think the artist is really the only free person. As an artist, you can say anything you want to say. That's your right. And I take advantage of that. Hopefully my students
do. It's a good choice of words. The art is perhaps seen by young people as, You use the word easy, but maybe it's a low pressure, maybe young people experience art or remember art from their early days as young children in kindergarten or elementary school as a kind of low pressure environment. And there's an opportunity. Does that give art educators an opportunity?
I think in a way, I think that in trying to understand all the spatial realities of composing a piece of art on a two-dimensional plane or a three-dimensional plane, there's a lot that goes into that that the general public doesn't understand. There's a lot to it. There are no accidents. Sometimes the painting is made with the accidents, but you have to know the rules. You have to learn the rules, and then you can make your accidents work.
And that's where the student learns, as you said, the math problem, solves a math problem,
right,
or solves a
spatial problem,
a physics problem.
A physics problem, yeah. What's in that paint you're using? Is it going to kill you? So you need to know.
Now it's chemistry,
right,
class.
Now it's chemistry.
What's
right.
the paint? What's the relationship between the paint and the surface that you're painting on?
Mm-hmm.
Now
mm-hmm.
you've
even down to which one dries faster.
Right. I wonder if sometimes the takeaway that you're hoping for as an arts educator is not so much here's a great piece of art that was produced by the student, although certainly that's a goal, mm-hmm. but here's a step that a student has taken in terms of building character, building confidence, having that belief in him or herself.
And Eric, you go at it and you just keep going at it. In JDH, I was working with Measure 11 kids, and these are kids who have been accused of doing something pretty awful. So I worked with these kids on a series of murals. We did 5 murals, and two are in JDH and Donnelly Long right now, and the other 3 are in, one, if you're ever called to go to court, if you're ever going to be a juror, you have to sit in this little room. Well, one of the paintings is in this room, so I've got a captive audience of this painting that I say my kids, me and those incarcerated Measure 11 kids did, and they were all really proud of the work that we all did there. And when a new person would come in, some of the older guys would say, "Hey, look, let me show you what I just did." And he would, then they become the expert. They take ownership of the piece. And that was the part that I was most proud of.
Very nice. We spoke a little earlier about the sort of current state of things in American society, and that, of course, includes a lot of sort of self-examination, kind of self-evaluation about who we are and where we're going in terms of socioeconomic issues, in terms of cultural, racial issues. I took a group of my students, I and other teachers took a group of students to the impromptu memorial at the Hollywood Transit Center yesterday, which is in response to the tragic killings on the MAX train last weekend. This is obviously an almost unspeakable crime. It, I think, has shocked the city. And what you see at the memorial is an outpouring of sympathy, of support. It's also very artful. There are flowers, gifts. There's chalk that's been provided, so people have written messages all over the sidewalks and the walls of the transit center. And while it is a terrible development, it is an opportunity, it seems to me, for us to talk about where we are in terms of race relations, in terms of social justice. And it seems that what people really want is a conversation. And I'm wondering where art fits into that conversation, what role it can play in the messages we want to send to each other, and the things we want to say to each other, and how art can help us communicate. You talked about how the artist has no limits, mm-hmm. can say anything, can communicate any message. Where do we use art to help us in this conversation?
One of the things I try to do with my art is open those conversations. I think these conversations about race are very, very difficult. They're difficult for me. I think they're difficult for everyone. But they're conversations that we have to have. And we live in the whitest city in America. And underneath the civility is this ugly underbelly. This ugly underbelly that can kill people. That can kill people at a Hollywood station. Some guy. It's history repeating itself.
What can we assume, or what can we hope to see and to hear from artists at this time when that conversation is so important?
Well, Eric, I can only speak for me. My position is it's a position we have to talk about it. And we have to talk about what I say to that, what I say to what can I do as an artist is agitate. Without confronting some of these issues, they kind of get swept under the carpet and they'll go along and then they'll rise their ugly head somewhere else along the line. I choose to think that most people in this world are good people. And if you know something to the contrary, I don't want to entertain that. That I believe. But I think that somehow we've been led down a path that we've got to get off of that path. We were built on something horrific. This country was built on unimaginable cruelty, and it continues at a lesser level. But when I see those kids in Donnelly Long, I worked with over 100 kids. Most all were African Americans or Latino. White kids aren't committing any crimes. I worked with two white kids in 2 years, and I saw these black kids being encouraged to plead down to a felony, and their lives are ruined. I had a real hard time with that, and I've painted about that.
You've as I mentioned before, you've used some iconic images from
Aunt Jemima,
buckwheat, right? Yeah. Where you are calling attention to the fact that we're careless about how people of color are represented in advertising and marketing in art.
But not careless, Eric. Not careless. This is calculated. It's calculated. People, black people, NAACP people, we've fought about against these images forever. they don't go away. They make too much money for someone. So the only way I can confront that is to call them out. Say, I didn't create this image of buckwheat. I didn't create this image of Aunt Jemima. I didn't create this image of Rasmus. These are images that since slavery, in slavery we were good Negroes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they didn't call us Negroes. After slavery, we were bad Negroes. Oh, they didn't call us Negroes. And so we get your Aunt Jemima, you get your buckwheat, you get all of these negative images. And this is how we have been seen for over 100 years.
The goal, I'm sure, is to sort of change the use of certain images in advertising and marketing. Is it? Mm-hmm. Are we having any success?
Yeah, we are. Aunt Jemima used to wear a headscarf. She was a fat, asexual woman, and that's changed. A number of those images have been softened, but the same person who gave us our beautiful, jolly Santa Claus also gave us Aunt Jemima.
You've seen the way that art can empower young people. Do we need more focus on art in schools?
We do. I mentioned earlier that industry is looking for creative people. That's what art school is about. Art school is about creativity. You learn to draw and you learn to paint, but you learn to think. You learn to think in creative ways. Some people say outside the box, but you learn to think in creative ways. You learn to problem solve, and in some ways develop yourself spiritually.
And you feel there is room to provide more, put more of a focus on arts in schools. We hear plenty about the future is going to be about math. The future is going to be about science. Mm-hmm. Do we neglect art at our peril?
Well, see, you're more of an expert on the high school art scene than I am. What I've tried to do is fill the gap. I've worked with Talented and Gifted. I've worked with SEI, Caldera, and places like I've tried to. I see that missing in art school, and I know that art was very, very important to me. In high school, it was my identity. I was the artist in high school. Thought I was going to get a scholarship, but they don't give scholarships in ghetto schools. It just didn't happen. I think that, for me, it gave me a sense of identity. It gave me a sense of worth. It gave me friends, you know. I designed all the gang jackets. But that's
take whatever work is available.
We're talking about the 50s. We're talking about deprived neighborhoods, and we're talking about apartheid. Los Angeles was a system, and still is, to some degrees, a system of apartheid.
I think that, by extension, what you're saying suggests that, yes, if we put opportunities to make art in front of kids, then we sort of increase the chances that they're going to, or make it possible that they will find something, see something in themselves, or find those problem-solving abilities in a way that's going to help them more broadly in the future.
And find some confidence in who they are. I've worked with one kid in juvenile hall. One of the things that I used to get them engaged is I taught them how to do portraits. with a projector. And they loved it because it was immediate success. For some, one kid, a couple of kids, but one kid, we had to go through that process maybe 10 times. He wouldn't do it. He wanted to do a portrait of his mom. He wanted to do a portrait of his sister, but he was afraid to tackle it. But after maybe about that 10th one, he says, let me try it. And he was off and running. And he'd walk around. He was proud of this painting, this drawing that he had done. I don't take any credit for that, but I was kind of pounding myself on the chest to see him walk around and then to see him hand that to his mother in the visiting room. That was powerful for me, and I'm sure it was powerful for him.
You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. This is Eric Bartels. Our guest today has been artist and educator RV Smith, whose work can be seen as part of an exhibit called Constructing Identity at the Portland Art Museum through June 18th.
Thanks for being here, RV.
Thank you, Eric. I appreciate it.
Hello, KBOO listeners. The time is 12 o'clock, and you are listening to KBOO Portland, your radio station. Did you know that there are many ways to connect to KBOO no matter where you are in the world? You can listen online. KBOO offers two web streams that are compatible with iTunes and most media players. And even if you're on a slower connection, you'll be able to listen to our original music, news, and public affairs programming. Find out more about how you can listen to KBOO anywhere you happen to be by going to kboo.fm/listen.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public